I just want people to realize their potential. I am so shocked of where I once was to where I am now. And so when people come to me saying, I don't think I can get out of my work and it's so tough, or I don't think I can ever lose weight, or I don't think I can ever lift weights in the gym, like, I was there. I was saying all these things. I was upset about all these things. I was, you know, like, I'm never going to be the person that I want to be. But you can, and you can with a little bit of help. And I just feel very passionate about making others feel better about themselves and knowing that they have so much more in them than they think they have.
I wanted to start this podcast, which we'll get into a lot of diet and exercise, health and wellness things, which is kind of at the foundation of self-improvement. I want to first ask you, you have a coaching business, an online health and wellness coaching business for women. And I just want to ask you first, why do you do this?
So it's not something that I thought I would ever do. You know, like when someone has like a, you know, longing passion, I don't think all my life I've thought, oh, this is what I've wanted to do. But I came to a point in my life a couple of years ago where the pandemic hit, COVID happened. And I think it gives you that chance to really slow down in life. Well, it maybe gave some people that chance to kind of slow down and pause and really think, like, what do I want to do with my life? What direction do I want to go in? And I was already experiencing my own health and wellness journey, whereby I just started to focus more on my own health, well-being, exercise, eating well. And I started doing that more for physical reasons. You know, I wanted to look good. I was getting married, all these exciting things, going on holidays. But what I didn't realize was actually the mental benefits, the mental fitness I got from it, the confidence I got from it, how far it was able to take me out of my comfort zone. And all those amazing benefits. And I kind of had my own journey in that sense. And I guess when COVID hit, and I'm a dentist also, and dental practices closed down for a while during COVID, it gave me a chance to be like, what do I really want to focus on? And where can I add more value to people? And what is my purpose? And I really wanted to start helping it was men and women at first, to kind of start to prioritize themselves, because it's very easy to kind of get within the circle of life with work, easy to get burnt out and to not put yourself first. And I wanted to work with people to empower them to kind of put themselves first mentally and physically, I guess show them all the benefits that I felt that I experienced. That's kind of where it all came from. I didn't actually go about thinking this is going to be a business. This is going to be my new job or my profession. I kind of just started out like on social media, an Instagram page, sharing some fitness tips, sharing some health and fitness tips. And then from there, I guess I got very lucky, and that kind of developed more into a business. And I guess 3.5 years later, it's continued, and, you know, I love it, and I've created a great work-life balance for myself in that sense.
You've told me that you've scaled back tremendously on the dentist work. You still are in, you know, one day a week or so, but far scale back from what you used to. You said something interesting there, which is purpose, and that's something that I think about a lot in life. So I'm wondering, when you were full-time dentistry, thinking about doing this thing that you're doing now, kind of what did you think your purpose was when you're being a dentist versus what is your purpose now?
Mm-hmm. I think when I became a dentist, which is almost, I think, 10 years ago now, I didn't even understand probably the concept of purpose. I would say throughout most of my life up until my mid-20s, I was going with the flow of life. So what maybe I was expected to do. So you're going through school, you get good grades, studies, university. And then I kind of just went into dentistry and I thought, that's my path. That's my calling. I don't really know what else there is. And I think as I got into it, I realized like I found it more, I found it challenging. You know, don't get me wrong, dentistry is a wonderful profession. It's such a flexible profession. We're helping people who are in pain and you know, improving their smiles and confidence and everything like that. But I don't think it was, it felt like my calling. But at the time, I guess I didn't know anything different. In fact, when I got into my first few years of being a dentist, I thought I had to copy what everyone else was doing, which was maybe go into, you know, study more. And I was doing a diploma in restorative dentistry. So kind of advancing myself in that field. And it was only when I say I hit around 24, 25, you can call that like maybe a midlife crisis. I don't know what it was, but it's that time of life where I'm sure you've heard people say where I feel lost. I don't know who I am. I'm trying to find myself. You know, I would come home from work feeling unhappy. I remember like, you know, coming home and crying to my mom, this is really tough. I'm burnt out. And slowly, slowly, I did start to scale back my days. I went from 5 days to 4 days to 3 days. So I gave myself permission to like cut back. And then I think as I did that, that's when I started prioritizing myself in terms of health and fitness. And I think secondary from that, you just start to learn more about yourself. The self-awareness increases. What do I want from life? And then that took me to kind of understanding what my purpose could be or what I was really good at. But I don't think until my mid-20s, I really knew that. I just went with the flow of what I was supposed to do as an Asian female, kind of, you know, being a dentist kind of thing.
So when you started making these small changes to your life during your mid-20s, where did you start? How did you connect to your health and wellness back then?
I think when I felt lost, I reached out for two different types of support. So I kind of started some therapy and some kind of counseling in that sense where I could kind of work with someone to help me figure what I was going through and all these changes mentally that I was going through. That was kind of one side of things. And then I hired myself like my own health and fitness coach where I was like, I want to feel my best ever physically, fitter, stronger. I want to get in the gym. I want to lift weights. So I just started by asking for help because I didn't know how to do it myself. I think I was stuck on my own in a way that I was just in a bit of a rut and anxiety and things like that. And the only way that I was going to get out of that is saying, hey, I think I need some support here, which I think is a brave thing to do, not necessarily, you know, a weak thing to do, which I maybe thought at the time, like, you know, you think, oh, I can't do something or I don't know how to move forward. And everyone feels like they've got it together. But I think one of the bravest things to do is just to put your hands up and say, I think I need some help. I think I need some support. And I continue to do that. And I did that. And it's been amazing just to be able to have someone to work with like that.
A lot of people who are just starting on a health and fitness journey, whether that's they're just starting exercise, they're just dieting or whatever else, a lot of people come in with a lot of motivation and they're very inspired. But as I'm sure you often see with your business, it can dwindle pretty quickly. So I'm wondering, did that happen for you at all?
I guess I completely understand in terms of like motivation. And I think I probably learned that you can't rely on motivation alone, which is what I work with in terms of my clients. And I think that it's really understanding the deeper rooted reasons of why you're doing something, why you've chosen to do something. And then always kind of keeping that at the focus of your mind, because there's going to be days that you don't feel motivated at all. Like 50% of the time, I don't feel fully motivated. But that doesn't mean I don't want to carry on. If I kind of go back to my why am I doing this? Why did I decide to do this? Then that's what I guess keeps me going.
So on the coaching side of things, It's one thing to care for your own health and wellness. I mean, that's a full-time job. Now you want to help other people kind of realize what you once realized. Why did you want to do that rather than just focus on yourself?
Because I always thought, I can't. I always thought, I can't do this. I am never that person who could do this. I am so unconfident. I could never do that. So for me to be able to then say, I am doing this, I can do this, I'm doing more than I've ever thought of, I just want people to realize their potential. I am so shocked of where I once was to where I am now. That shocks me. And so when people come to me saying, you know, I don't think I can get out of my work and it's so tough, or I don't think I can ever lose weight, or I don't think I could ever lift weights in the gym, like, I was there. I was saying all these things. I was upset about all these things. I was, you know, like, I'm never going to be the person that I want to be. But you can, and you can with a little bit of help. And that's what I want to kind of, that's why I want to work with these people, because I feel like everyone has some potential. Everyone has potential more than what you believe in. And it's all in the mind, right? It is all in the mind. And I feel I've been on a quite a long, I guess, mind journey in that sense. And I just feel very passionate about, you know, making others feel better about themselves and knowing that they have so much more in them than they think they have.
I think that's why you and I get along so well, and why I have so much respect for you, because literally what you just said is my mission, is my why as well for this podcast or my writing. Everything that I'm doing is based around, I, like you, you know, I've been obsessed with health and wellness pretty much my entire life, but really in the last 5 to 10 years as well. My life is so good. I wake up every day and I feel amazing. I feel physically amazing. I feel so grateful. Like, I love my life. And so many people hate their lives. Yeah. And I feel like, obviously, it's difficult to change your life, but I just feel if I can awaken people and shake them to realize that your life doesn't have to be this bad. You don't need to physically feel as gross as you do every day. There are ways to feel so much better and happier and have stronger relationships if you just take some accountability and just make some small changes to your life. And so I can struggle with empathy sometimes. And I wonder, like, why can't people just understand that? Don't you work out and just feel so much better? Don't you eat vegetables and just feel so much better? And when you sleep for 8 hours, don't you just feel so much better? Why wouldn't you want that all of the time? Why don't people want that all of the time? I don't get it.
But you've been there on both sides, right? You've been there probably like me, like where maybe you didn't think you could. And sometimes we like sit there feeling sorry for ourselves. Like, I love reflecting and journaling. And I think there was a point where I'd be like, you know, I don't think I can do this, or life is hard. And then like, you just get that light bulb moment saying, well, you know, your loved ones or your mom or your dad or your husband or spouse can't help you. Only you can help you. Only you can help yourself. And then, yeah, I think that's kind of always what keeps me going, that I'm the only one that can make a change.
When you're working with your clients and they're kind of at that stage of, okay, I've hired you, what does kind of the process look like from there?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so once we've kind of decided to work together, we get on a call where we really discuss their personal goals and their challenges. So what they want, like I kind of say, like, what do you envision for yourselves? Where do you want to be? What's your kind of end goal? And then what stopped you from getting to that end goal in the past? What's your biggest challenges? So for example, it might be, I want to lose weight, but I don't have the time, or I never last more than 2 weeks on a diet. And then we kind of dive into that. Or it's, I want to feel stronger in the gym, but I'm too scared to go into the weights area, and I don't know what I'm doing, and I don't have a lot of time. So we kind of like, I kind of have a really good understanding on their background, their lifestyle, what they want to achieve. And then based on that, I can create, I guess, a personalized plan around the food and nutrition aspect. So making sure they're eating the right foods, fueling their body with the correct foods that they need to achieve their goals. We work on exercise and movement. We also work on like sleep, stress management, hormones and things like that. All of these things can play a big part to kind of the whole journey. So it's a very holistic approach I take with clients, but it's not just one plan I give and then here you go. I kind of give them their kind of plans initially, and then we kind of check in with each other daily, weekly, to make sure how they're managing to follow everything, what their challenges, what's coming up for them. Is it a work event? Is it this and that? So it's kind of like how to navigate through, I guess, a plan, but with real life stuff happening, right? It's not just like a 3-month diet that you have to follow meticulously. It's like, how do we make this more of a lifestyle kind of solution rather than just a short-term quick fix?
Losing weight is something that a lot of people want to do. It's a very common health goal in the US and in the UK as well. Kind of if someone comes to you and says that they want to lose weight, what treatment plan do you prescribe for that?
I guess I first want to understand like their reasons about why they want to lose weight, what it would actually mean to them. So I kind of understand, is it for you? Is someone else making you do this? Just first of all, understanding in that way. But in terms of like weight loss, I guess one of the key things to focus on is your nutrition. So it's not necessarily about what you can't eat. It's about how much you're eating. So more about portion sizes. So people think I have to eat really healthy. I have to eat, you know, salads or soups or superfoods to lose weight. And that's a little bit misleading. You can eat some chocolate. You can eat some chips. You can eat some salad. You can eat all of these things. It's doing that in moderation. So I guess I work with them very closely, look into their current kind of eating habits and make tweaks within their current eating habits, whether it's via a bit of a meal plan or something like that, to ensure that they're eating correctly to lose weight. So that would kind of be the first thing. And I guess with the nutrition side of things, it links a little bit into mindset and habits around nutrition. So some people might be stress eating, emotional eating, and they don't even realize that they're eating more, and that's contributing to their added weight loss. So I can't just focus on giving them a meal plan and set portions. We've also got to dive into certain habits as well and make sure that we're kind of working on those alongside. So nutrition plays a really big part, and movement and exercise. I'm a really big fan of strength training. But whatever my client enjoys, whether they want to do strength training, a bit of cardio, they enjoy classes, you know, I want to make sure that they actually enjoying their kind of coaching process. So I include exercise that they enjoy, but I do put more of a focus on strength training because there's so many health benefits in terms of lifting weights and incorporating that in their lifestyle.
With weight loss, there's all sorts of mental things associated with it as well, especially for women. I can't tell you the number of conversations I've had with women, both on this podcast and off of this podcast, who really put a lot of their self-worth into that number that they see on the scale. How do you, I mean, because in addition to knowing everything that you need to know for exercise and nutrition, you're also in part a therapist as well, because you're often dealing with some very deep-rooted mental problems when you're talking about weight loss. So I'm just wondering how you go about navigating that, and do you often see in the people that come to you some issues that go beyond just wanting to lose weight? It's more mental.
Yeah, a lot of the time it is mental, and people and clients come into me very focused on a scale weight number. I think like it almost feels like the scale weight number, they feel maybe the scale weight number will define their progress, or, you know, the lighter that I am, like the better that I am in terms of that. In that sense. And I think I used to be like that as well. So in one way, I feel like I can handle it well with my clients because I've been there before. So I can be relatable. In terms of how to manage it, we don't really just focus on weight and scale weight. It's about how they feel in their clothes. It's about taking pictures each week. I also kind of just ensure like we don't always focus on, you know, weight. It's like, how did you progress in the gym this week? You know, how are we getting stronger? How are you feeling in terms of energy levels? So I try not to make the whole focus every time we speak about kind of weight and things like that. And if they are very focused on that way, I guess, yeah, we unpack that a little bit more, or we just, I think throughout the process is a learning curve. So what they usually start to realize on their own that actually this is more than just about weight loss. I am feeling good. I am feeling strong. I made this decision for myself today. I allowed myself some time to eat instead of like spending all my time with the kids. I feel more energized. So I think actually throughout the process, they go on their own self-development journey and realize this themselves.
So a lot of people who lose weight, and I don't know if this is necessarily the case with your program, but just in general, a lot of people who lose weight, they lose the weight, they're feeling good, and then not too long after, they actually put back on the weight, and sometimes even more weight than they originally had. Why do you think that happens?
That is generally because they're probably started off with a very unsustainable like diet. So some, like, you know, whether they've gone like on a juice diet, or they, you know, I've heard people say, I'm just going to go on a juice diet for this time, or I'm going to go low fat or keto or something like that. So it's not very sustainable in terms of like keeping the weight off. And so they resort back to old habits because, you know, they need some carbs. And also they probably haven't worked on their deeper rooted habits as well. It's just, I'm following a plan. We can follow a plan. We can all follow a plan for 8 weeks, 2 months, 3 months. But then you're not, you know, working on why you were maybe overeating in the first place, or what led you to have, you know, what led you to feel demotivated about not moving or things like that. So I think how I work with my clients is we don't cut out carbs. We don't cut out sugar. We see what they're eating already, and I just make helpful tweaks into their diet to make it feel more sustainable. So, for example, you know, it's been Valentine's Day this week and people are going out for Valentine's dinners and they want to eat their favorite foods and they want to go out and enjoy themselves. And how I would work with them is like, look, let's look at the menus beforehand. Let's have a little bit of a strategy in terms of, well, you don't need to go for starters, mains, desserts, and three glasses of wine. You can still enjoy yourself by having a main meal and choosing something sensible on the menu. So it's just, I work with the clients so they can feel a bit more educated about the decisions that they make, in, you know, when it comes to socials. And yeah, that's basically it. So it just feels a bit more sustainable. And then we work on habits as well, so that when they leave me, it now feels natural to them and it's their lifestyle.
Right. And a lot of people kind of are afraid to start a diet, or to what you just spoke about, kind of do something unsustainable. A lot of that, the failure to adhere to a diet, is often because people think it's very depriving. You're just not allowed to eat the things that you love. These are bad foods that have no place being in my body. How do you navigate that and tell your clients that, no, you can still eat the things that you love and you don't need to punish yourself if you do those things?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Like I always say to clients who, like, I have a little form that they fill out before we jump on a consultation, and they always write, you know, I can never stick to a diet, or I find, you know, I'm useless, or like, you know, something like that. And actually, like, most of the time, it's not you that's the problem. It's the diet that you've chosen to follow that's the problem, or it's not the right solution for you. So if they've shared with me previous diets they've been on, I can kind of understand what's not worked well for them, and I can teach them that they can eat foods that they enjoy and still lose weight. So it's a constant communication and educational process, like a coaching process, in order to kind of get them to understand that, you know, dieting doesn't have to be hard, and it doesn't have to be restrictive. But if you don't know that, then you're just going to guess and think, well, this looks healthy or this doesn't look healthy, so I'm not going to eat it, and I'm just never going to eat it again. And then that's not something that's sustainable.
A common physique that a woman wants, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is just what I've gathered. They want a tight booty. They want a slim waist.
Coke bottle.
Yes, the Coke bottle. They want toned arms and toned shoulders, but not big arms. So how do we get to that ideal body type?
Yeah, so that body type, it's toned, where you've got, you know, all the right areas, you know, you're shapely. You got a nice shape to you. So I guess it's having a combination of low body fat and muscle mass in certain areas. So you might want to work on building your glutes. You might want to work on dropping body fat around your tummy area, and you would be working on building muscle around your shoulders areas as well. So if someone wants to get to that stage, it's a combination of dropping body fat. So you're working on your nutrition, you're being in a calorie deficit, eating enough protein, but at the same time, you're working really hard with your strength training. And so you have a good strength training routine, where you're working your full body and you're building muscle at the same time. And you focus on something called progressive overload, which means you're trying to build up the weight that you're using incrementally with your sessions. So, yeah, it's a combination of strength training, eating correctly, and understanding that it takes time. This is not going to happen in 2 to 3 months. It doesn't take too long to drop body fat. Takes a lot longer, especially for women, to build muscle. So it's just about being patient and consistent. It's simple things that you need to do. You just need to keep doing it for a long period.
The most common excuse in the world for any type of behavioral change is, I don't have time, Sunaina. Yeah, I want to have that healthy meal. I don't have the time to go get the ingredients. I don't have time to prepare them. And then I don't have time to clean all the dishes required to make that thing. I don't have 60 to 90 minutes to go use in the gym. That's crazy. I have to do X, Y, and Z. When people say that to you, what do you respond with?
I even had that in a check-in this week, which is like, because I ask, is there anything more I can help you with for this week? And someone said, can you add more time to my life? And I think we always want more time. We're so busy with everything, with work, with home life. It's really about how to make the most of the time that we have already. And sometimes I think it just comes to a point of not being as educated in certain things. Like, we think that we need time to eat healthy. We're going to be eating anyway. We're going to be cooking, washing anyway. It's just understanding and having that education or a little plan to follow in terms of actually, what do I need to do to eat healthy? So I think it comes a little bit in terms of just knowing what you need to do and just making a direct swap in that way. But I'm also a really big believer of planning, scheduling. If I'm just thinking about what I need to do on the day that I need to do it, it's not going to happen. If I say to myself, tomorrow I'm going to go to the gym, I need to know what time I'm going to the gym, then what time I'm setting my alarm clock to go to the gym. I probably need to get my gym clothes out. So I think it's about planning, preparation, and I actually like to write everything down. So I'm almost visualizing the next day, visualizing the week ahead. You're almost telling your brain beforehand, I am going to do this, rather than on the day, I probably need to get my workout in, like, I probably need to get my workout in today. I'm sure it will happen somewhere. It's not going to happen if you don't plan it in. So I think you just need to be a little bit more specific and meticulous with your time. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, sometimes we feel like if we don't have the full 45 minutes to go to the gym, we won't go to the gym. So it's kind of like that all or nothing mentality. If you have 15 minutes, use those 15 minutes to move and exercise. It doesn't have to be perfect. You're still going to be moving forwards in the right direction. So what I would say in terms of two pieces of advice is, A, plan and schedule the day before, the week ahead, write things down, visualize what's happening. And B, don't be afraid if things aren't perfect. Something is always going to be better than nothing within that time.
If you were the Queen of England, which some might argue that you already are, if you were the Queen of England with absolute power over the UK, and on one day you had the ability to decree that everyone in the UK make one lifestyle change to improve their lives, which would then, if you're improving everyone's lives, you're improving the UK economy and just overall lifestyle. What would that one change be, or that one lifestyle behavior be, that would be more important than anything else that you could say?
It's going to sound quite simple, quite basic, but I think it can be quite powerful. And it's walk more, right? Walking has both mental and physical benefits. Like, if you can get out, you're getting out for fresh air. You're getting away from your desk. You're having that mental break, even for 10 minutes. You're breathing in, you know, fresh air and anything like that. So just mentally, I think that's, you know, something really, really important. And then the power of just even getting 10,000 steps, 8,000 steps in a day, in terms of weight loss or feeling healthier and fitter, increasing longevity of life and things like that. That's so important and amazing too. So I think something that hopefully everyone can try to do is just walk more. And what I would say is kind of like look at how much you're already walking already. So if you've got your Fitbit or your step counter and you notice you're doing like 3,000 steps a day, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. Focus on adding another 1,000 to that for the week ahead. That's another 10 minutes of walking, and then maybe another 10 minutes after that. And soon you'll get to a point where like, oh my God, how am I going to fit this in? And again, it's having that schedule, plan, routine. And I think that's and something that that just kind of keeps you grounded for the day. So even getting a 10-minute walk in the morning can have amazing benefits before you've even started your day, you know, or a lunch break. So I think that's something that everyone could try to do, which is literally walk more.
But Sinéad, come on. A walk in the morning? The sun isn't coming up in London until like 8 a.m. right now. It's cold. It's dark, and the sun doesn't even come up sometimes, and often in London. Right here in New Hampshire, there's snow on the ground. It's 20 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't want to go out for a walk. Why would I want to do that?
I think, like, again, it's that motivation thing, right? It's like, oh, like that. It sounds like hard to do, like, you know, getting off your sofa that feels really nice and warm to go out and about. The doing comes first, the feeling comes after. I don't think you're ever going to come back most of the time from a 10-minute walk thinking, I really regret that. I should not have done that. Okay, fine. If your shoes literally soak through with loads of water from the rain, I get that. I've been there. Maybe you want to do it then. But you're rarely probably going to regret getting some fresh air, getting a break. So I think it's really saying to yourself, like, I know it feels tough right now, but I'm going to feel so much better for it if I do it. I'm just that like 10-minute break, that 5-minute break, if you're even not feeling so good in that moment, could really just help you make you feel a little bit better.
It is incredibly important to do hard things. I've really been on this kick lately, because as much as you don't want to do something, as much as you don't want to put your shoes on and go out for that walk in the cold when the sun isn't up or when you're really busy, you don't regret doing it. You feel so much better. And because you feel so much better, you get more confident. Oh, I can do something a little bit harder and a little bit harder. You get more confident. You feel better about yourself. And I think if I could decree something every day as the King of England, it would just be do something hard today or do something that scares you today, because that will inevitably expand your comfort zone. And if you do something just slightly hard every single day for a year, you will be in a drastically different place in a year, which I want that for everyone. So I just wish people, like, I understand we're wired to be comfortable. I've really been obsessed with evolution recently, and our ancestors just wanted to be comfortable. They wanted to survive the night. They wanted to survive the night from the warring tribes, from the elements, from, they just needed fire and shelter and food every day. They were in constant survival mode. And we are still in constant survival mode, even though our survival mode looks drastically different today. At the root of it, we just want to be comfortable. And a lot of people are very comfortable today.
I agree with that. Like, and yeah, I think that the only, where I've come from in my journey, like the only way to see progress develop is you have to get uncomfortable to get comfortable. But we always want to feel like we want to protect ourselves, right? We don't want to feel that pain, maybe, but it's always going to bring something positive. There will always be positive from it.
Yeah. And like I told you the last time we did this podcast, I said then that I don't really like lifting weights. Now, I like it more than I did then, but I still don't really like it. Anytime I go to the gym to lift weights, I kind of have that moment in my car before I go in. I'm here again. I don't really want to do this. But I will say, the biggest thing is just showing up. Because I will never get to the gym, have that moment, and then turn back. Like, that's... Who does that? Once you're... So the thing is, you just got to show up. Because once you show up, showing up's the hard part. Doing the work is the easy part. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had my husband, Nim, like, again, he loves going to the gym, but there are days where, he just doesn't want to go. Or I have my clients who feel like, they'll message me saying, I really don't feel like going. And all I'll say, or even when it comes to their walk, I'll just say, all I want you to do is put your gym clothes on and arrive at the gym, and you can do 5 minutes. All I ask you today is to do 5 minutes. If you then feel like you want to do more, do more. If you really feel like you can't do more, come home. No one comes home. Right. you just need that.
That would make you feel worse about yourself. Yeah. Is going there and then turning back.
Yeah, yeah. And so you kind of like, okay, the hard part is just pushing the front door. The hard part is just telling yourself, I've got to do this, right? Once you're there, and the moment that you lift that first weight, or you're moving for the first few minutes, you realize you're going to get some endorphins. You're going to feel good. And then you want to push yourself more.
Okay, so I want to completely switch gears now. Thank you for all of your insight there. So let me set the scene here. It's 13 months ago, me, you, your husband, Nim, and my friend Kelsey, who's been on this podcast several times, we're out having a night in London. We're having a great time. The drinks are flowing. So many laughs. Learned a lot of things about Nim that night, that's for sure. Toward the end of the night, you confided something in Kelsey and I, and it was something that we were really touched by when you told us. Can you tell us and my audience now what you told Kelsey and I then?
Yeah, gosh, it feels like such a long time ago. We were literally kiddies, we need another night like that. But yeah, so that's 13 months ago. So that must have been January.
Time.
Yes. And I think we shared with you that we were about to embark on our IVF journey. So in terms of a little bit of background around that, we had been trying to get pregnant, I would say, for about 2.5-3 years. And I think at that point, we were kind of in a place where the next stage for us was getting some help and starting our IVF journey. So yeah, I think it was a great night for us to have, actually, because I think we'd been going through a lot at that point, and just to kind of hang out with you guys and let our hair down, it was really good. So thank you again for that.
No, we're honored to have been a part of that. How difficult was it for you to come to this decision of going down the IVF road? Because everything that I've come to understand about IVF, it's not easy at all. Physically, it's not easy. Emotionally, it's even harder. So kind of how much did you weigh this decision? Did you guys make a pros and cons list? Did you go back and forth a million times about whether you should do it? What did that process look like?
It was definitely a long process, I would say, especially for me mentally. I would say it probably took me about a year, even a little bit more, to kind of come to terms with this is kind of the route that we're going down. And I guess I even didn't really know much about it. I didn't have much education about what it involved. So I think I had to do a lot of research on it. And I guess coming from a medical background, like, again, we want to weigh up all the pros and cons and learn about every single risk that's out there. I think the most difficult thing for me is I like to feel in control. I like to feel in control of my body. You know, I put into my body in terms of food, like, you know, nourishing foods. I have the control in that way. I have control over my body in terms of like exercise and things like that. And I guess with the IVF, it was coming to terms with like, I'm now going to hopefully do something beautiful, but the process is me having to almost give that control of my body to these doctors to be putting these hormones in. What are the risks with that? What's the long-term risks? I think I just found it hard to come to terms with not feeling in control of what I was going to do with my body. And maybe knowing from some people and certain stories that it's a stressful process. You know, like people say, oh, moving house is one of the stressful things you can do, or planning a wedding. And then you hear about IVF. I didn't really hear much about it in the first place. I don't know many people who'd gone through it personally, but it seemed to have a slightly negative connotation to it. So it just felt scary at the time.
So when did you finally make the decision to go through with that?
Yeah, so it was, again, the beginning of last year. And I think one of the reasons why it also felt really heavy is because of me not enjoying my work as well as a dentist. So that I was kind of feeling very overwhelmed with work, very burnt out. And at the same time, you know, I was kind of like in a place where like, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to go through IVF soon potentially, and I don't even feel physically and mentally I feel in the right place to look after myself. You know, how am I going to do all of this, and how am I going to be in the best position for all this? So that's when I actually decided to hand in my resignation at my dental practice and kind of say I think I'm going to give up dentistry for a while. I didn't know whether it was for a while or whether it was forever, but I needed some time to just kind of look after myself. And then I think, again, when you have some time, your brain slows down. And I felt more mentally prepared around February time last year. Okay, I'm kind of ready to do this. And I was also working alongside like a therapist, just kind of like a clinical hypnotherapist, I guess, at the time. And she kind of said, like, if you're going to go into this, go into it feeling confident about going into it. Don't start this if you're not feeling good about it just yet. And so I allowed myself that time to kind of think, actually, you know what? There could be such a beautiful positive thing that comes out of this. I think at this point, like me and Nim, we want a baby. This seems to be our next step. And I kind of just mentally prepared myself better for that by then. So I think I just needed time. And I needed to put myself in a better position mentally. I wanted to feel my best mentally. Then I wanted to go into this process.
So when did you officially start the IVF process? And what exactly, I mean, honestly, my listeners could probably use some education too. It's probably one of those things that, like, you hear the term and you're like, oh yeah, I know what that is. I know what that entails. And then you actually think about it and you're like, wait, actually, I really don't know much about that. So you don't need to get super graphic or anything, but yeah, just please tell us what exactly, once you started the process, what it looked like.
Yeah. Okay. So we started the process around April time. And I would say, like, if all kind of goes to plan and all goes well, it's probably around like a 8-week process. For us, it took a bit longer. There were, don't want to say complications, but things that didn't quite go to plan. So for us, it kind of lasted from the end of April. To around August. So it was about a 4-month process. And I guess there are two stages to IVF. The first one is where the woman has to go through some injections. So there was a point where I'd be injecting myself with some hormones, I think up to twice a day, and that was probably for about 2 to 3 weeks. And the purpose of that is, I guess, like once a month in terms of a period, you release an egg. Hopefully I'm saying this all right. It might not be all correct, but, you know, during our periods, you release like one egg. And when you're going through IVF, you want to maximize your chances for a baby as much as possible. So we're aiming to stimulate more eggs in that time. So we're injecting ourselves with more hormones and the aim is to produce more egg follicles. Then the woman goes for like their first, I guess, surgery or procedure. And that first procedure is called an egg collection. So you're kind of put to sleep, had a bit of sedation. And this is where the surgeon kind of extracts the eggs from, tries to extract any eggs that have kind of been created from your ovaries. And that's kind of the first stage. So if you're lucky, you're going to get multiple eggs. You may just get some, you may get none. So it's very different for every couple. So that's kind of like the first stage. And then if all kind of goes to plan in that first stage, you've got a number of eggs, then the partner kind of does his thing in that same time, and they kind of bring the eggs and the sperm together, and you're kind of waiting to see if they join, fertilize, and if you produce a number of embryos. So that's kind of the first stage, the second part. And if you're successful and there's fertilization and you're producing these embryos, then they take the best embryo and you go for your second procedure, which is your embryo transfer. So they take that embryo like a couple of days later and they insert that into your body. And technically at that point, you know, you're pregnant, you have an embryo in your body and you've got to see for, you know, 2 weeks, they call it 2-week wait, whether your body kind of accepts that embryo and whether you are pregnant or not. So I guess that's more of the simplified version of it, but it could take a lot longer. You might need to go through multiple egg collections. You might need to go through multiple embryo transfers depending on your kind of circumstance.
You explained that beautifully. Thank you. I think that's very easy for the people to understand. Did you have to go through multiple do this process multiple times, or did it take the first time?
We were very lucky that it took the first time. So with the egg collection, I had a good number of eggs, but I did get quite unwell with that. I think I was a bit overstimulated. So I had something called mild OHSS. So it was quite uncomfortable for a few weeks. Some will experience that, some will experience more, some will experience less. So, you know, I was lucky that we had a number of eggs. And then I was lucky that the first time we did the embryo transfer, that was successful.
That's awesome. I'm so happy for you. But I have to imagine in between that buffer period where you're just kind of waiting to find out, did it take? What was that like? Were you anxious? Were you stressed?
Yeah. And if you remember me saying, like, I found it hard, like, I like to be in control, or not that I like to be in control, but like I like to know what was happening. And I think with this process, you have to go into this process knowing that things might not go to plan. So things didn't go to plan. So even though I've said what I said and things took, we had to cancel or postpone things for 1, 2, 3 months even because of certain things, or maybe I was a little bit more unwell with certain things as well. So I think the hard part was like when something was supposed to be on this date, you're given like a timeline of dates, you know, the injections from this date to this date, then you have your egg collection and then you have your embryo transfer, and it's over like a 2 to 3 month period. And so you kind of have this focus. And then when things weren't going to plan, or I had to potentially take some more injections, that's the part that I found really tough, because I'm like, well, I couldn't quite see the end, or, you know, when is this going to kind of work? So that was tough, mentally, physically. I think that was uncomfortable for a couple of weeks. But I managed through it. And I think that you just have to go into the process open-minded and having some good support around you. Like Nim was absolutely amazing through this. You know, my parents and his parents were very, very supportive. So it was tough mentally and physically, but I think I just kind of had my good mantras, affirmations. And, you know, I said I was working with, like a therapist at the time, and I don't want to say voodoo or anything like that, but she was quite quirky in terms of things that she shared with me, quite spiritual. And she always said to me, like, focus on faith over fear, or everything is happening for you and not to you. So lots of positive mantras. And I kind of just had that kind of at front of mind, to kind of get me through it as well.
Take me back to the day that you found out that you were successfully pregnant on the first try.
Yeah. So what they do is they bring you back after 2 weeks, and usually you would do a pregnancy test at home if you're checking if you're pregnant. But for them, they wanted to do a blood test. So we went into London to our clinic. We did our blood test. It was around 9 o'clock, and they said, in 2 to 3 hours time, we'll give you a call with the results. And we were like, oh my God, what do we do with these 2 to 3 hours? Should we go and eat? But then if we eat and then we go home, we might be getting this call on the tube. Should we go straight home and just sit there and know what to do? So we went to a nice restaurant for breakfast in London, Disham. If you haven't been, you have to go.
I just went there.
Oh, okay. Amazing. We sat there. We didn't really speak to each other, twiddling our thumbs. And then we decided like to eat really quickly and just go home. And then we got a phone call, from one of the doctors, and yeah, it was very emotional, a relief. I mean, just gave each other a hug on the floor. We tried to actually video most of our journey. So from April to August, we had pictures and videos, so everything we've kind of recorded. So we look back on that sometimes. But yeah, no, we just kind of turned toward each other because both of us have been through this, right? Like I know a woman goes through a lot, but mentally the man, you know, they have to provide a lot of support. You know, they go through their own emotional things, and both of us just kind of like, yeah, teared up. And then we started telling our close relatives, our parents and everything, and they're really pleased for us.
So you said that there was kind of a stigma around IVF when you started telling your close friends and family. Did you include that part? And if so, did you find that there was kind of some stigma around it?
I mean, I know there's probably a stigma about it because I don't think a lot of people talk about it. I've realized that actually more people have gone through fertility issues or IVF than I've ever known before.
The moment
that I've opened up, people have opened up. But if I don't open up, I hadn't heard any stories. I think Nim is the same. He was opening up to some people at work and didn't realize that lots of people have gone through it. So I don't feel hesitant to share. I think it's something that you're going through. I'm a believer of talking, sharing your experiences. No, I didn't get any issues in terms of sharing. I think maybe like the older generation, especially in terms of my Indian family, like I think I even tried to explain it to my grandma who like lives at home with my parents, and they don't understand what it is. I've never heard of it. Yeah, they've not heard of it. I mean, they're 80, 90 years old. So they not aware of it. So it's more just trying to make them understand. But yeah, no, haven't had any issues with sharing with people.
I guess I didn't realize how, I don't know when IVF first started becoming a popular thing, that that wouldn't have happened just during their, that it hasn't been around their entire lifetime. I imagine the stigma, I would guess, is just embarrassment. Some people feel embarrassed about it, that they can't have a child in natural ways. Is that where the stigma stems from?
Potentially. General expectations. And I honestly don't know what it is, because personally, I've not experienced, like, I don't feel the need, like the want to share it. Like, I think like the only reason why maybe there's been hesitation in terms of sharing it is because it felt like no one else was going through it. Like we were the only ones going through it. And shall I tell you one thing? I think like where I was a bit nervous to share with people is, I think some people associate like not being able to conceive sometimes with like, people are just too stressed, right? Like going through a lot of stress in their life. And that's something that I received a lot, a few comments from, which is like, oh, you're probably not getting pregnant because you're stressed, or you don't know how to manage your stress, something like that. And that feels very personal. That can feel like quite a personal attack. You feel like to blame, right? Like, cause you're stressed, or you don't know how to control your stress. And, you know, that's not going to be the case for a lot of people. There's underlying issues sometimes, or sometimes it's unexplained, or sometimes there's lots of different things that could be contributing to it. And so I think the only reason why I might have been hesitant is to tell certain people who may have known my background of going through some stress and anxiety, is that they would then say to me, is it because you go through stress, or you've gone through like some anxiety and stuff? And then that would make me feel like it was all on me. And that would be the tough part, I'd say.
So how long have you been pregnant for?
I have been pregnant for seven and a half months. So we're
far along.
Yeah, since you saw me last month. We're big. We're getting there. So yeah, we're due pretty soon. April.
That's amazing. That's so soon. How has being pregnant over these last 7 months, how does the reality of it match up to your expectations or fears, doubts, concerns that you had about it going into it?
Mm-hmm. I think once I started going through IVF, I think I've come a long way mentally in terms of like not overthinking too much ahead or to the future. So I never allowed myself to think like pregnancy is going to be a certain way, and these are my expectations about pregnancy. I've just kind of taken it as it comes. It was a little bit tough at the beginning in terms of a lot of morning sickness, not feeling so well. Now I have a lot more energy. Well, I did have a lot more energy, and now I'm becoming a little bit more tired. Yeah, I guess in terms of expectations, I didn't have any. It's been a little bit inexplainable. Like, I think like I'm almost like, I'm very excited to meet my new baby, but I've also really enjoyed being pregnant and just bonding with this baby inside me. And I was saying to Nim the other day, like, I feel like a lot more grounded in terms of when I'm feeling stressed in the day, I kind of like look to my bump and be like, actually, life is fine, or I don't want to put you through this stress, so we're good. Or it just feels like I'm not stressing about things as much as more, because I've got something way more important to be not worried about, but just that's more important. So it's just grounded me a little bit more in terms of being pregnant. I even talk to baby and bump and like kind of tell him about my day and things like that and how things are going. And it just kind of feels quite nice.
Wow. That's so wonderful to hear you say that, because I feel like when women talk about being pregnant, it's a nightmare, something that they never want to do again.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong. Like I said, in the first 3 or 4 months, there was like vomiting every day and sickness. And,
oh, yeah, that
and,
part.
And, yeah, and it was tough. And I think like I've gone through that, then I've gone through this. And I'm sure like it's going to be like a continuation of a whirlwind of emotions. Like it's you know, I think there's many things to come from it. But any negative feeling I'm having, I'm trying my best to reframe it in a positive way. That's like the amazing thing that I took out of my IVF. Like, I think I learned so much mentally and became mentally more resilient through my IVF that it's helped me along my pregnancy and some of the difficulties I faced. One thing I would say is we probably had a little bit more anxiety throughout the pregnancy just because it felt like more of a miracle pregnancy, so we're being a little bit more protective. So there's been a few scares here and there, and we've gone to the doctors and things like that, but we're working our way through it. I think the most important thing is that me and Nim support each other mentally and are there for each other as much as we can, so we can lean on each other to help us through.
Your entire life it's just been all about you, and then you got married, then it's about you and Nim.
Yeah,
but you can't really prepare for being a mother. I think anyone I know who has become a parent before, they're just like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. And you're just kind of learn on the fly. Have you been really able to think yet or process yet just how drastically your life is going to change overnight, literally?
I think it's starting to hit me. I'm on like week 30 and I'm like, it's been all about me. And like, I don't mean like that in a selfish way. Like, obviously, like, you know, it's been Nim and I, but like, I've always been very like, I need to put myself first, self-care and all of that. And like, it feels, yeah, I think it's going to be very new to know that there's like now someone else that's going to be my everything, my priority. But I think that having a good base for myself, of my own self-care, I would hope that as much as I'm going to prioritize my baby and they're going to be number one, I'm still going to be looking after myself. That feels like the most important thing to me, that like I feel like hopefully I can go into this knowing that I'm gonna be able to look after both of us. That's the main thing, because I know that so many people feel like it's all about baby and it's not about mother at all. I'm scared of that transition, but I've been scared about many things in my life and I've got through it. And so I can only hope that like I can embrace this change too.
Damn right you have. So you love to be in control and you're obsessed with health and wellness, and being pregnant doesn't really go hand in hand with any of those things. How difficult has it been for you, someone who is very good at controlling what they put in their body and controls what they look like and is just obsessed with looking and feeling your best? When you're pregnant, a lot of that kind of goes out the window. So how have you been able to process all of that?
Again, a lot of this processing was probably before I even started the IVF journey. I think I needed to overcome a lot of these mental barriers to be able to feel fully comfortable in going through IVF and accepting that, hey, I could even get pregnant from this as well and things are going to change. So a lot of the processing was before. And I guess in terms of the body changes that we naturally will experience, I think it was a little bit tough to begin with. It's still like tough, but every time I kind of go to that place in terms of like, oh, you know, feel like I've put on weight and everything like that, which naturally you're going to do. I just kind of reframe it in a way that like, well, I'm growing. That means baby's growing. That means baby is healthy. So again, always trying to put a positive twist on it. And in a way, like, because I've developed good healthy habits with my exercise and fitness, I've kept my fitness up throughout my pregnancy in terms of food. Again, like, yes, there's been some cravings and I've had more junky foods than I would normally do. But again, it's all been in moderation. And because I've kind of got those habits already in place, I feel like hopefully after, you know, I can get back to it, because I know how important it is for me to kind of eat well and stay fit. So yes, I've put on weight. I understand that that's going to be part of the process, and I'm trying to reframe it. I've been reframing it in a positive way. And I know if I want to get back to, you know, looking fitter, then I know I can.
How have you needed to modify your exercise while being pregnant?
Yeah, so like whether you've exercised before or not exercised, you can still exercise through pregnancy. If you haven't, if you are going to continue exercising through pregnancy, I'd recommend getting some sort of support, personal trainer who's qualified in the correct way. For me, I have just basically modified my routine slightly. So there's going to be certain exercises as you progress through your pregnancy and bump gets bigger and things like that, where you don't want to be in certain positions. For example, you want to avoid lying down on your back, or you want to avoid crunches and things like that. So it's modifying certain exercises. And as you get through your trimesters of pregnancy, you're probably going to start reducing the intensity and not pushing for like that final rep, and just kind of, yeah, keep, you know, having that moderation. So I've continued with my strength training. I've done reformer Pilates, carried on with my walking, and all of that like is going to be healthy for me, healthy for baby, help with my recovery post-pregnancy as well. And again, it's just helping me mentally through my pregnancy. I could not imagine not being able to exercise during pregnancy. To be honest, at the beginning, through the first trimester when I was really unwell, I wasn't able to exercise much. And even through parts of my IVF, I wasn't. And I think that is what probably wasn't helpful for me mentally, just doing the things that I would normally want to do. But overall, yeah, it's modifications and getting some support as well if you are going to do some exercise during pregnancy. But it's one of the best things that you can do.
Last question.
Yes.
You keep referring to your child as baby. What's the name?
No name yet. No name.
No name.
We've thought of a few names, but
Troy's a great one.
Not quite there. Yeah. Troy could be a good name.
Leon?
Yeah.
I'm sure Nim's put that one on the list.
He's put some interesting ones on the list.
Like what? What's the most interesting one?
No. He's good. No. No, they've all been decent. We're pretty much on par with what we like. Just kind of like a short, simple, modern name. Not like a Sinana Chandran, which is quite complicated for people.
Such a pretty name.
No, thank you. No, we've got some in mind. I think we're probably only going to know once baby is born and see what they look like and then kind of allocate them.
Well, I'm so happy for you that that this process has worked out so well for you so far. Just a couple months away from the big day. I can't wait to see you guys in London when you're parents. And I can't wait for baby to make their appearance on the podcast in the coming months. That absolutely has to happen. Yeah, getting exposed to the public eye immediately.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. A night out
Thank
with
you,
baby.
Sinana.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. You're awesome. You're inspiring. Thank you for all the education and the information that you provided. And I'm really honored that you and Nim chose to share that information with us 13 months ago on that night. It's something that I will forever treasure. And the little holiday that we took to Ireland a year ago, as well as kind of like your last big hurrah before you started doing all this adult stuff. So very honored and grateful to have been a part of your story. And I can't wait to continue being a part of it going forward.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, Troy. Thank you for having me.